Good evening, everybody. It's Sunday evening, about 5:30 p.m. Sunday, the 23rd of October. And that's Lamb looking. He's messing around with his bone. And Pinky's just come down the stairs. And I've got a cup of tea and a cup and saucer, because I bought some bone china cups and saucers that are microwavable and dishwasher safe, because they're smaller and I'm fed up with having to make half cups, so I can have a small cup but a full one. Anyway, I said I'd be back to give an update on what's been happening with me. It was the anniversary, it was 6 months on the 14th of this month, and I meant to do this before, but I have been quite busy, that I started on hemodialysis, and I just wanted to tell everyone, let you know how that's going, and what a difference it's made to my life. I sound like a born-again Christian now, don't I? Because I had a procedure the other day to remove my neckline, and the doctor that was carrying it out asked me, I'm too hot already, open the back door, asked me how I was getting on with it, and I told him that how much better I felt, how ill I was, and how I didn't think it was too much longer before I would have been on really dangerous ground. In fact, I probably was already. And I told him it made me 100% better. And I said, no, I can't say 100%. I've got to tell you, it's made me feel 1,000% better. And he said, that's really interesting, because all the patients I see, no one ever tells me that. They never tell them how it makes them feel. Which I actually think is really sad. Because a lot of people get fixated on the fact that you have to spend part of 3 days a week at a dialysis unit or the hospital. I go to a dialysis unit in Ringers Road, Bromley. It's just off the high street, round the corner from TK Maxx, for anybody who knows Bromley, opposite Sports Direct. And it's downhill on the left-hand side. It's a horrible hill there. And I go Tuesdays, Thursdays and Saturdays, and my time is usually about 4:30 till 8:30. I do get transport there every time. They pick me up about 3:15, get there about 3:45. Sometimes I go on earlier, sometimes I go on later. It depends how everyone else is doing on the earlier shifts. And I get home. My son, Connor, often picks me up because he works in Bromley, and sometimes he doesn't finish till 8:30. Like last night he brought me home. Doesn't always, so sometimes I do have to rely on transport, but it's not too bad from there. It's not as bad as it used to be when I was at King's, because when I first had this line, my line put in, I spent the first 5 weeks at King's till they stabilised me, and I was well enough to move from a hospital to... I wasn't in for 5 weeks, but I mean, I was attending the dialysis unit there for 5 weeks until I was stable enough to be able to be transferred to a unit where there's not a doctor on the premises. What really happened with the other dialysis is that it worked okay for the first 2 years. Then I started to get, which I didn't know at the time, something that apparently is called therapy fatigue, where you have to keep doing a process over and over again, and it becomes a chore and a burden, and it's hard to do. And I would often miss sessions and not do it properly, and it got quite bad in the end, because the more I did that, the sicker I became. Then on the 8th of December, I slipped down the bottom stair here and I broke my foot, and I couldn't use the air boot they gave me because I couldn't use the crutches, and I hadn't got any shoe high enough so that I could wear the air boot in one foot and walk with the other one, so I didn't wear it, so I didn't want to walk on it. So, and I was so unwell by this time that I couldn't really do much in the house. So I started to stay upstairs, and I thought, oh, well, at least I'll get my dialysis done, and I didn't. Now, They didn't have a go at me because they understand these things, but they said to me, we're going to give you one more. My consultant said, I really think you ought to go over to hemodialysis, which I'd never wanted to do. And I said, oh no, please give me one more chance. Now, for 5 weeks, I did it really well, and I was doing it 5 times a day. But then when I broke my foot, it all went out the window because I got depressed. I couldn't get downstairs easily. Everyone was out all the time. I was mostly on my own because they were all at work and whatever, college. And and it was a time of year I hate. It's Christmas time. Well, I don't mind Christmas time. Christmas last year, I could have blinked and missed. I was so unwell on Christmas Day. I just fell asleep for most of it. I was so out of breath if I just went to the toilet. I actually had 10 litres of fluid taken from me when I started on hemodialysis. Well, I tell a lie, 7. But they had to do it slowly. They can't just do it all in one go like that because it'll make you really ill. They had to do it over, it was over about a month, 3 weeks. But I actually, what happened was I was really unwell. So Christmas came and went and I was ill and I was up the hospital every week, not well. And then eventually my doctor said to me in April, beginning of April, right, you're going on to hemodialysis. He didn't give me a choice. He said, we've got a duty of care to you. I know now that I was suffering from quite bad depression. I didn't take anything for it because I didn't need to. I just had to turn the corner to get back my life again because I was so out of it, really. I had no energy to do anything. I could just about get to the toilet and back. My heart would be absolutely thumping. Up and downstairs absolutely killed me. I had chronic pains in the tops of my legs, not the joints, but like the sides of my legs. I'd be like an old woman going up the stairs. I'd have to go so slowly. I had chronic diarrhea. I had it all the time. Then it'd go for 3 weeks like that. Then it'd be all right for a week, and then it'd start up again. My skin was covered in blisters. Legs, not my face. Arms, my left arm was the worst. I've still got some scars. I don't know if they'll fade. They probably will. My back was disgusting. And I think it's all the poison coming out the pores. And I scratched myself to pieces. My skin was bleeding all the time. To have a shower was a major ordeal. I couldn't stand up long enough in there. And we didn't have a chair to go in there. So Obi used to help me have a bath. I wasn't even supposed to have a bath because of my PD tube in my stomach. Because of the risks of getting peritonitis. But I didn't get it because I just covered it up well. And we put pretty much a bottle of Dettol in the bath each time. He had to get me in and get me out. So that's how the year started. In the beginning of April, the consultant, my sleep's still not that great, but that's the least of my worries. And it was then. So he had me in there and he said, look, you're going to hemodialysis. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to try and struggle on, I think this was in March actually, struggle on with your peritoneal dialysis, PD, for now. And then we'll get you booked in to have a fistula created in the arm, which is where they join a vein and an artery to make a big vessel to carry blood through the bloodlines to the dialysis, well, through the needles into the bloodlines, and to go through the dialyzer, which is the artificial kidney in the dialysis machine. Sorry, my lamb is hinting that it's tea time because he's chewing his bone. There's nothing on it. It's as dry as a bone. He said, we've got a duty of care to you. You are not getting the treatment that you need, and you are very, very unwell, which I knew. I did cry a bit about it first, and then suddenly it was like a weight lifted from my shoulders. Suddenly I thought, I won't have to worry about giving myself injections, because that was another thing. I'd become really anemic, and I couldn't seem to get it back, and that wasn't really my fault. I think I talked about that on here. It was because after I broke my foot, I couldn't stop shaking for like 5 days. And when I went to give myself the injection, it went everywhere. And 3 different people in the hospital, one of them was a duty doctor at the weekend on the ward. Another one was the transplant coordinator, and another one was one of the PD nurses on the phone. They all told me that I should wait another 2 weeks. Now, I knew that I was already pretty anemic as it was, because that goes with kidney disease. And so I didn't really want to wait 2 weeks, but I did, and then I got really sick with the anemia. That's why I was really out of breath, partly that and the fluid overload. And I was so weak. My hemoglobin went down to like 6.3, I think it was, which is pretty low. I was also covered in bruises. I had lumps on my ribs. I don't know where they came from. They've gone now. And everyone was shocked. My sister, when she saw me, when she came up to see me or down to see me, she was so shocked when I took my top off. She nearly had a fit. I think she nearly passed out. In fact, I wish she'd have hidden it a bit, because it really distressed me. Now, some people might say this is self-inflicted, but it was physically, but it actually wasn't, because I didn't even realise what I was doing to myself, because I was so depressed and so I was in like a hole and I couldn't climb out. And I used to cry every day and say, I want my life back. I used to think of my life, how I went to America on my own several times. I went to Nigeria on my own several times. I've been everywhere, brought up my family, been so independent, and now I couldn't do anything. And so when they said you were going to hemodialysis, part of me was relieved. I thought, do you know what? I can go there, they can do it, I can come home. And that's it. And they said, you'll feel better. And I said to my consultant, will I really feel better? And he said to me, you really will feel better. The PD, not only are you not doing it properly, there does come a time for most people when it doesn't work as well anymore. And I probably had reached, I know I'd reached that stage anyway, because even when I was doing it, I wasn't getting as much fluid off of me as I used to when I first started it. And I'd also stopped passing as much urine. And so I knew things were getting worse anyway. Not that they could get much worse. So he said, you really will feel better. The downside of all this is that no one prepared me for how traumatic hemodialysis can be. And I don't mean it's traumatic like a near-death experience or anything like that, but it's an ongoing thing. You know, each session can be good, well, as good as it can be, with no incident, but you can have lots of things that go wrong each time, so it's an ongoing drama, really. No one prepared me for lots of things. They give people a DVD to watch, but no one gave me one. I suppose they thought I wouldn't be able to watch it, but no one in the hemodialysis department prepared me in any shape or form. I mean, all I knew is you have a needle in your arm, that's it. I didn't even know that it's two, not one. So, it has been a bit traumatic at times. Shut him out, he's a bloody pain. And it can be very stressful. Right, hold on a sec, I've got a crisis here. Get out of there! Get out! Are you coming in here or do you want to be shut out in the cold? Come on, quick. You can be shut out in the cold then. So when I saw him and he said, we're going to create a fistula and then you will have, it'll take about 6 weeks to mature and then we'll struggle on with your PD. That was in March. By April I got so sick. I went in there one day and we got a taxi in there because I couldn't go on, I couldn't get the transport that day. And actually I called an ambulance and so I went to the hospital and they said, oh, you're having your line put in today, which I wasn't expecting because I didn't think I was having a line. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't know anything about my line. as far as I knew, I wasn't having one. So I actually didn't have it in that day. They said, actually, this was a Tuesday, and they said, we'll put it in Thursday. So they told me to do dialysis for the next 2 days, just pretty much, not exactly constant, but because you can't really do it constantly, because not that type of dialysis, because you need to leave the fluid in to work. You can't just keep draining it out. But I did over that, because I got home that night, and then wants to come in now. Pinky's out there as well. He's out to do my head in. Oh, get in. Yeah, there was a few times when I went up there, you know, like that. A couple of times in a taxi. This time, called an ambulance, because obviously just wasn't coping at all. I could hardly walk across the room. My legs were so weak, they couldn't hold me up. So they said, do dialysis for 2 days and then come in, we'll have you in Thursday, and then you can have the line put in the morning. We'll take the outer part of the PD line out after that, and then you can have your first session of dialysis in the afternoon. So I went up that day, Thursday. I was on my own because Obi couldn't get any more time, take any more time off work. And because I was okay. I mean, I was a bit better, because I managed, in those 2 days, I got 3 litres of fluid off of me. So I felt a bit better, but not that you didn't really notice. I was feeling sick all the time. I didn't know how I'd manage to do dialysis, because I would want to go to the toilet all the time. So, but it stopped the day I started that. I mean, I'm not saying I've never had an upset stomach since, because I have occasionally, because everyone does. But all that went, I never had it from that day. So on the Thursday, the 14th of April, I went to the hospital and I had my line put in under a local anaesthetic. I got quite upset because the risks are, like, they can puncture your lung, you can have to have a blood transfusion and all this stuff. But, you know, I said, I haven't got a choice. I had it done. It was very uncomfortable because where it goes in is in your neck, right near your throat, and the dressing's over it, and you couldn't move your head properly. And when you took a deep breath, it was quite painful in the neck. And then you've got these plastic tubes coming out down over your boobs. And it was pretty sore. But then I went to the PD unit and they clipped off the long part of my tube. It was still in my stomach. I had to go back the following week to have that taken out. So they clipped that off so I couldn't use it. So I couldn't do two types of dialysis at the same time. As if I needed any encouragement not to do my PD. Although I was very worried about the fluid overload, and I might have attempted to do it at home if they hadn't done that. So then on that Thursday afternoon, I had my first session of dialysis for 2 hours. They only took 1 litre, which is basically 500 mils, because they give you something called washback, where they put saline back in when they wash your blood back in from the machine. And then I went again on the Saturday. I spent the night in A&E on that Saturday night, because I had this cough and I was worried it was related to fluid overload. It turned out to be a virus, because he hadn't got it then, but Ronan got it a couple of days later. It was it wasn't a phlegmy cough, it was very, very horrible. And I'd also had, like, flu, because I never had my flu jab last year, and I really should get it done. I had flu in, like, January, where I lost my voice for a week, and it took 5 weeks to get over it. And I never ever get things like that. This is because I was so anemic and run down, and then I got another cold, and then I got this and I got that, and that's just not like me. I can go years without getting a cold. So it was a bit miserable. The whole year's been a bit miserable, but but April the 14th was the turning point, because when I came back that night, I felt better already. Now, some people might say it was in my head, but actually I really know it wasn't. I mean, it took weeks for my blood results to get to a reasonable level because my urea was really high. It was like 40, and it's meant to be about 2 in a normal person. And anything over 40, you can start hemorrhaging and having seizures. So I was very, very close to that thing. But I did feel better. I felt stronger. And I've talked to other people about this, and they've said exactly the same thing. They felt better from day one. Not completely better, but better. Yeah, but I've spent the night up A&E. They did chest x-rays and stuff, and they said there was a bit of fluid on my lungs, but it wasn't anything too dangerous, and that the dialysis would gradually take it off, which it did. It's been a hard journey. The following week I had my PD tube taken out again in the same room, different people, much nicer people. That was okay. It took about an hour. I did bleed afterwards when I stood up. It went all through my clothes and everything. And my blood pressure dropped badly. But that was all right. And then on the 12th of May, I had my fistula. I actually did an audiobook about that, so I'm not going to talk too much about that, but I had that done. And on the 7th of July, I had a scan, and I think I did an audiobook that day as well, and they said I could use it. But I was too scared to use it, so I actually started using it on the 11th of August. And it's been very much a roller coaster, because some of it depends on the fact that the vessel's not big enough. You start on number 17 needles, which are the smallest ones in diameter. So you're not getting as much blood coming through as you do eventually, because the fistula still hasn't developed. Mine was a good one, they said. It's got a branch in my lower arm, which can be used, but everyone is too scared to use it because they said they've never seen anything like it before. And when I went, they said, I think that was on audio, but she's the one with a peculiar anatomy. But everyone said it was a good one. I had some bad experiences at the beginning. I had one where the first time it went well, just with one. They start off with one needle, and you have one needle, and then the dialysis, the other bloodline goes onto one of the lines in the neck because it's got two branches to it. It was in the big vein in the right hand side of your neck. It's there, you could feel it. And so you start one at what they call one-on-one. And you usually start with because one is called the arterial needle and the other one is called the venous. So one is the blood coming out and one is the blood going back in. So they start with the blood coming out because that's its natural flow. And if they put too much pressure on using the venous, which means is the blood going back in, it can swell up in the early stages and damage it and cause a lot of bruising because it's not ready. So it expands with use. That's how it works. So they start with the arterial needle. The first time it went well, I only did 3 hours and instead of 4, which is what I meant to do, and I coped okay. I had a couple of people with me. I wasn't a baby. I don't have, there's local anaesthetic cream you can have, that goes in your arm, that numbs it. I don't have that. I just think it's a waste of time. Some people do use it, but I don't. I never have. It is painful, but, you know, there are worse things. So my main concern was it bleeding when I come home, which doesn't usually happen. You have to put pressure on it, which I do. I put pressure on it when they take the needles out. This is my first time of doing it. I did all right. And then they strap plaster. They put like a little gauze thing over the actual needle site that's on a plaster. And then they strap it with like cotton wool plasters, you know, that have got cotton wool stuck to the centre of it, and then just ordinary plasters. And they tape it so hard. It doesn't go right round your arm. It goes across it, across where the fistula is in the upper forearm, and it's at the front, and they strap it so that it almost goes round your arm, but there's like about the back of your arm is exposed, but they they put it on so tightly, because it's like a pressure dressing, so that it doesn't bleed, that when you take it off the next day, there's all these lines where it's been on so tight, but it doesn't go all the way round, because I couldn't stand that. So the first time went okay, the second time, yeah, that wasn't very good. The nurse tried several different sites, she couldn't get the needle in. I thought it was her, because another time she had trouble with it as well, but she was actually the first one that put two needles in, and she did it okay. So some of it is, when it's new, it's difficult, especially if you get bruising, and some of it does come down to the skill of the person putting the needle in. It really does. There's certain people I don't want near me. There's certain people I'd be quite happy to do it any time. But you can't pick and choose, unfortunately. So the second time, she was going to do my... she said she was going to use the line. But what she actually should have done, and what other people have done, is if for that particular day that needle's not going to work, and they were going to revert back to the line, which incidentally can't do now because it's gone, they would leave the needle in until the end. Just leave it with a syringe on it, on your arm, just taped down. Because when you go on the dialysis machine, they give you something called Clexane, which is an anti-clotting agent, so that it doesn't clot in the needles and in the your blood doesn't clot in the lines and in the machine and stuff like that. So if they take it out there and then, the needle, because you've just had that, it's going to make it bleed quite a lot. So she did take it out, and so she told me to hold it, which I did, and then she came back, she looked at it, she said it's fine, but she hadn't, most people have the plasters there, and they're taking them off, they take all the backs of them off while I'm still holding it, and then they say, okay, you can let go now, and they put their finger straight on it so that it doesn't bleed, then they lift the gauze up that they put over it, they check that it stopped, and then they plaster me down with all these plasters that off of which they've already taken the backs. But she didn't do that, she left me holding it, said it was fine, didn't tell me, and bear in mind this was my second time, didn't tell me to continue to hold it because she said it stopped. The next thing, she went round the other side of the table and she wasn't looking to get the dressings, which she should have already had there, and I suddenly felt this flow of blood all down my arm. It went all over the floor, all over my dress, so that wasn't good. She went, oh, but it had stopped. Yes, well, yeah, but you know, you don't just leave it like that. Another time the nurse, I'm not going to tell you every incident that happened, but another time a nurse left me holding it, and I said, oh, why does my arm feel really warm? I said, I am holding it in the right place, aren't I? And she went, oh, yeah, this was a different one. She's usually very good. She went, oh, yeah, it's fine. And then she looked and she went, oh, no. So that was bleeding. I've had times when the needles just didn't work. The alarm was going off on the machine all the time. They've had to put me sometimes on both lines. One time the line wouldn't work either. Neither of the sides of the line would work. The needles wouldn't work. They had to take me off early. Another time, at the end, they wash your blood back, because there's about 300 mils always in the machine when you're dialysing. They wash it back at the end, and they couldn't wash mine back. I had to lose that, but I was all right, because there must have been a clot somewhere in the machine, and the machine just would not let her do it. I've had some quite dramatic times with my... In the middle of all this, I had a time one day when I had five people round me all deciding what to do, and this was in the very early stages. Meanwhile, my blood pressure suddenly plummeted. I was sweating. I felt so ill. So it can be very stressful. And my blood pressure still drops sometimes. It did yesterday. I had to have saline, and I felt ill, and the alarms were going off. And that's what I mean. It's not always plain sailing. Very often it isn't. There's something that isn't right. Like Tuesday, there was a new lady. She's not new, but she's brought in from a different centre because they were short-staffed. She was doing what they call bank, where they bring people in. And she put the needle in wrong to start with. I thought she had it. Didn't feel like it went in properly because I hardly felt it go in. It was also lower down than I've ever had it before. And she put the other one in, and then the alarms wouldn't stop going off. And they always put the bottom one in first, that's the arterial one. So someone else had to come and take that bottom one out, make the top one into the bottom one, and put another one in the top. I usually bleed when they put the venous one in for some reason. It spurts blood everywhere. It's a bit gory, to be fair. If I had to choose it, it's not a very nice thing to have to do on an ongoing basis. The line is much easier because they just clip the blood lines on it, put the machine on, and it goes. I mean, I did have one time when it didn't work, and they had to put, at the end they put a stuff in it to seal it and to stop it clotting, and there's an antibiotic as well because it's just a bit dangerous having that line there. And this one time it wouldn't work, so they did have to put an extra strong stuff, an extra strong drug in there to unclot it, and then it worked. But the line's really easy. The line works fine. But the reason they don't like you to have it in there is, A, you don't get such good dialysis from it because it's not coming directly from your heart. And B, there's a risk, a serious threat of infection because where they've put it in, where it comes out on your chest, of course it can never close up because the tubes are in the way stopping it. So there is like a hole. Now the tubes are laying on top of that, and then you have a dressing over the top, like strapping them down, which you have to keep on all the time. But if you do get an infection in there, which thank God, touch wood, and I didn't, it will go, because it's the line was laying in the big vein in my neck. It's called a tunneled line. The blood, if the infection got through that hole, it would be going straight up that line, straight up that vein, and straight into my heart. So that's what would have happened. So they don't, I mean, some people can't have a fistula, and then of course they have to have that and just take the risk because there's no alternative. The lines don't usually last that long either. I mean, I had mine in 6 months and it was okay. The bloke who took it out did tell me that there was someone, he took someone's out once that was been in there 10 years. So anyway, I gradually progressed from the 15 needle, from one needle to two, then from 15 to 16. No, sorry, I'm getting it all wrong. Started off on 17, that's the smallest. Then went to two needles of 17, gradually went to two needles of 16. As the fistula widened, then it could take more blood, and it meant that I didn't have to have the pump. Is the maximum speed is 300. Sometimes I've had to have it on 200 when it wasn't working very well. But now I'm on the 15 needles. The 14 is the biggest, but very, very few people have that. I don't know what kind of people do have that. Maybe it's really big people that, you know, need a really lot of dialysis. Most people are on 15, size 15, two needles, and that's what I'm on now. It is feeling very bruised today, I must say. Which is a bit of a worry because I've got no line to fall back on. They don't like using it when it's bruised because it's harder to get the needles in and stuff because the tissue's all swollen and they don't tend to work as well. But we'll see. If anything does go wrong with it in the future, they would just have me up to King's in 2 seconds, as they told me, and I would have another line put in because you can use it the same day I did last time. So I had the line out. I was meant to have it out on the 4th of October, but there was some cock-up with it because they booked it on my dialysis day, so they changed it to the 21st. So I went up for that. I was in there all Friday having that done. It took about an hour and a half for them to take it out. Again, the risk this time wasn't the punctured lungs and stuff. It was just hemorrhaging because they make an incision. I've got 4 stitches where the lines come out, but it also leaves a hole in the vein in your neck. In fact, I've got my finger on it right now. It's probably about... difficult to tell because it's closed up. I never felt it when it was open, obviously. My fingertip kind of fits in it. It's just like a little thing there. And that was the hole. And when I'd had the... as soon as the tube was out, even before they stitched it up, stitched up the incision... they, of course, it was, I had local anaesthetic, they had to put pressure on my neck for about 15 minutes, which actually wasn't very pleasant, because it was right near my throat. One time he moved slightly and I went, he actually choked me. I went, oh, you're choking me. And then what happens is that they have to check your blood to make sure that the clotting agent, that is clotting well enough before you have it done, otherwise they can't do it. The chances are that the risk was that I could have needed a blood transfusion, which would in turn have made it more difficult to get a transplant in the future. So they really try and avoid it. The other thing they had to check was potassium, because high potassium, that's another thing I've had to come to terms with since I went on hemodialysis, the potassium in everything, because that is a serious risk to cardiac arrest. So that's a daily struggle, to be fair, but I'll talk about that in a minute. And that's one of the disadvantages of hemodialysis, but there are plenty of advantages. So he put pressure on it 15 minutes, and then he said a clot forms in there, and then the inside, the tissue walls come together kind of straight away and close it up. And then within a day, it's completely healed. I can still feel it. Maybe I always will be able to, I don't know. Can still feel it there. Yeah. It's not quite as big as the tip of my finger. My tip of the finger can kind of sit on top of it. Not the whole tip, you know, the tip on the end of it. That's what I mean. So then, of course, you have to stay for a while afterwards to make sure it doesn't bleed. But mine was fine, so I was allowed home. So that was that. So now it's me and my fistula, we're on our own together. And long may we last. I am working up for the transplant. I've got one more thing to do, and that is to get my teeth sorted out. Because in all the hoo-ha, I cancelled the appointment and they struck me off. They didn't strike me off, but they said I'd have to get re-referred. It was really a misunderstanding, because I thought I was going to have a tooth out this day. And it was when I was still really anemic and I was frightened it was going to bleed a lot, because I did have that when I was a child. My tooth bled all day. And it's actually the same one. No, it's not. That was my first teeth, obviously. I think it is the same one. Anyway, when it turned out that it was another... I'd already had one assessment and all the x-rays. It was another assessment, but I didn't know that. So I could have gone for it. And meanwhile, in all this, my foot healed up all right. It's fine now. I never even went back for the final x-ray because I was too caught up in all the other stuff. Right. A lot of people go straight onto hemodialysis and they complain that it takes up a lot of their life. And this is true. But having been on dialysis at home and it worked okay at first, but it didn't, there are a lot of advantages to it, because when you're home, your home is your home and your life is your life again. You haven't got all the boxes everywhere, you haven't got all the medical crap everywhere. You haven't got someone going on at you to do it when you don't feel like doing it. When you go out, you haven't got to worry about getting back. That part of it is really lovely. I mean, we went out for the day, we were out all day, went down to Whitstable. I think I did an audiobook of that as well. And, you know, I couldn't have done that before. I couldn't have done it. Of course, I wouldn't have had the energy. Even when I was on PD, I wouldn't have had the energy to stay out all day like that. Going on, I've trained. I'm down flights of steps. So the advantages to me outweigh the disadvantages, because I've been to a really bad place and most of these people were put on dialysis before they got to that stage. So they see the disadvantage of it. I like the twilight shift, or the twilight zone as I call it, because, you know, I have up till 3 o'clock that day, and then when I come home, I just have a snack or a microwave meal or something easy, and then I don't really want to eat that much, although I'll get really hungry when it comes to it. I can't really eat much, and then I will just I usually fall asleep in the chair waiting for Obi to come home, because I don't want to go to bed and fall asleep. But what happens is, I still, last night I fell asleep down here for an hour. When he came home, we went up to bed after a while, and I was asleep. I wait till 7 o'clock this morning, and then I slept till 11. But it is a bit, my day is a bit messed up sometimes because of that. But I do have all the day on my dialysis day, just not the evenings. I'm with other people who've been through the similar things to me, and so, like, I've got quite friendly with one lady. She's an older lady. She's in her early 70s, I think, about 70. And funnily enough, we found out after about 4 months of being in the same thing together, because we never really talked that much at first, but now we talk all the time. Her husband always stays with her. He's really nice. But we found out that her children, her grandchildren, knew my kids and were in, because two of her grandchildren live with her. Well, one's gone away to uni now, live with them. But her grandchildren were in the same schools, both schools and classes, some classes with my kids. And she remembered me. She said, "I do remember you now. You've got a sister, haven't you?" And I went, "Yes." She went, "Yeah, that's right. I remember my daughter when we went up to pick the kids up from school," because they didn't live with her then, saying, it's nothing bad while they live with her. It's just the daughter fell out with the mum's boyfriend. I mean, the daughter's, you know, Carol's daughter's still alive. It's just that it was more convenient because one of them, the boy lived with her because it was nearer to his secondary school, and the girl because she didn't like the current, she's not with him anymore, but the boyfriend that her mum had at the time. But it just became a habit to live with their grandparents. And I think they have the blooming life of Riley, to be fair. But they've got a great big bungalow that backs onto Goddington Park, which is not really up, really near me. There are some right characters down there. I can write a book about them, but I'm not going to go on about them now. There's a lot of very, very sick, well, quite sick people and very old people. I'm one of the younger ones. There's a few other women that's on my shift that's the same age as me, but mostly they're old people. There are some younger people, but they're not on my days or on their different shifts. I feel sorry for the younger people because I've had most of my life without this shit. So I talked to her, and she went on dialysis last year, and she is a diabetic. I'd say probably about 75% of people that are diabetics, but I'm not. She started dialysis about a year and a half ago, so she's been there with this fistula thing and been there and done that, and she had real, real issues with hers. And she didn't even have, they never put a line in, so she never even had that to fall back on. Sometimes they just send her home because they couldn't do it. But luckily she hadn't got bad enough that it would be life-threatening like it would be for me now. It would be for her now too, because these things don't usually stay the same, they get worse. So it's been a bit of a journey. I've met some interesting people on the way. I've met some not very nice people on the way. The nurses are mostly nice. There's quite a few Nigerians, of course. I'll get on with them like a house on fire. One of them calls me my Nigerian lady. In fact, she's gone on a course, and I saw her up at the... It was lovely to see her up on the ward the other day. She came and threw her arms around me. She went, "Oh, my Nigerian lady!" Life goes on. And I've got stronger day by day. In fact, my haemoglobin's got too high now, so they've got to cut down the injection that they put through the machine 3 times a week to none at the moment, because it was 13.7 and they don't like it to be above 12. I have iron once a week through the machine. All the blood tests are taken through the machine, so I have enough, as if I don't have enough. I would say no more needles, but that's just not true, you know. No more blood test needles, put it that way. Not that I ever cared about the needles. The needles don't scare me. It's the risk of bleeding that does a bit. It happened to Carol the other day. She said it never happened to her before. She went to the toilet when she came off dialysis, and she was washing her hands and she thought, oh, what's all this warm? Why does my arm feel warm? And then it, the thing is, it's an artery, so it's not just going to bleed a little bit. It's going to, it goes with a bang. And it happened to another lady I know up there, Sylvia. She said she got up and went to the toilet, and when she came back to get her bag and that to go home, she said she felt this dampness, and then she said it exploded everywhere. It is a bit of a concern, but usually if it's going to happen, it will happen before you leave there. So there's people on hand to deal with it. You're not supposed to sleep on it. I'm not supposed to carry heavy bags. Mine's in my right arm. Most people have it in the left. I'm really glad mine's in the right arm because of my dog, guide dog. I don't think I could work a dog and have a fistula in the same arm. It wouldn't go. Luckily, they thought the veins in my right arm were better. And when they told me that before they did it, I said, well, that suits me better. I suppose they could train me a guide dog that walked on the right, but it has been done. As a result of all this, that I'm feeling so much better. I was going to leave, because my dog's 9 in January, 1st of January. I was actually going to leave getting a dog till I'd had a transplant, but I've improved so much and I feel so well now. Shut up! I mean, I'm not back to how I was before I had kidney disease, but I'm back to how I was before I knew I had it. Before, not I knew I had it, but before it affected me. Does that make sense? I mean, sometimes I'm probably not quite as well as that, because, well, mind you, I did get tired then. I do get tired sometimes. The day after dialysis, I often feel quite tired, but as the day goes on, I get with it, and I'm, you know, I can do everything around the house. I can hoover. I haven't been able to do that for bloody years. You know, I can go out. I had aftercare. GDMI said, Mel, you still walk faster than most guide dog owners. I don't walk as fast as I used to, but it's slow for me, but she said it's faster than most. So I actually did decide before she came that I don't want my dog to work much after he's 10, so she's going to put me back on the list next year, next June. She said she doesn't think I'll wait even 6 months for a dog. And I've even got a chance, she said I've got a much higher chance this time than last time of getting a Labradoodle, because a lot of them are going out. I know quite a few people. There's one that lives locally, and she's gone to an old man of 80. It's his first guide dog. And to be honest, they're not just going out to people with allergies now, and a lot more of them are coming through because she said they're getting the poodle side of it right now. They were really manic, the ones that they were having, and they were too lively indoors. They wouldn't sit down. Because poodles are very active dogs, and so are Labradors, so you have to get the combination right. She said the ones that are coming through now are quiet indoors and quiet socially, and they do tend to go loopy in the park. And I said, well, my dog's like that anyway, so, yeah. The disadvantages of this, apart from spending time up at the unit, which actually isn't that unpleasant, you know. It's a bit long-winded and boring, but if you've got someone to talk to, there's another lovely man. I think he's... I don't know if he's from Iran or somewhere like that. I'm not sure. Because Carol's husband asked him, his name's Ali, and he said, it's difficult to describe where I come from, but it's somewhere around Israel. So I don't know what he means by that. But he's lived in this country for 39 years. He's married to an English woman. He's got 2 daughters. He's a lovely, lovely, really lovely man. He didn't want to do dialysis. He wanted to just let it go, you know, and die. But one of his daughters came all the way from Australia to tell him that you've got to do it, Dad. And his wife said, you know, they all made him do it. He said, and his wife said, I'll take you. You don't have to have transport. I'll take you and bring you back. And he's so nice the way, I know he's a nice man. But I can tell by the way, you know, he's been married to his wife all these years, and he's not doing it to show off because he talks quietly on the phone, but he says, hello, gorgeous. And he's so nice, you know, you can tell they really, and the fact that she wanted to keep, all his family want to keep him and not just let him bump off. He's such a lovely man. He's in our ward. And then we've got a Nepalese guy, a former Gurkha called Mr. Puna Limbu or something his name is. He's a funny bloke, but he doesn't really speak much English, but he does a lot of funny actions and sounds and people find him quite amusing. Not in a nasty way. They don't laugh at him, but they kind of laugh with him because it's really a shame. He knows some things, like they say, "Are you cold?" And he says, "Cold? Yes." He's quite old. I'd say he's probably knocking on 80. "Yes, cold." And he doesn't like waiting for the transport. He stomps up and down and he keeps coming and, you know, gesturing and that. And Obi said he really cracks me up. If one of us is going with him in the transport and he's got to wait for us, he keeps coming up and down the corridor, pacing, and they keep going, "Go and sit down in the waiting room. They'll be ready when they're ready." It is frustrating having to wait, though. But when someone else has gone on late or something and you've got to be transported with them, because there used to be a lady that it always happened to with me, but she's quite unwell, and that's another story, but she's been moved to the afternoon shift because they are quite short-staffed on the evening shift, and they only want well people. They don't want anyone that needs extra help with anything. I mean, I know I do a little bit, but they don't want people who can't hold their... Some people can't hold the needle sight when it comes out, and someone has to, when the needle comes out, someone has to sit down and hold it. They don't want people like that on the evening shift because they've got too much else to do. So, yeah, but anyone who's really, I mean, there's still some quite doddery people on that evening shift, don't get me wrong, but there's much worse ones on the afternoon and morning shifts. It's a nice atmosphere there, though. It's quite a happy place. They bring around a cup of tea and some digestive biscuits. You can have tea, coffee or chocolate, but I only have chocolate once a week. That's what I'm going to come on to, is the dietary aspects of this. And you can take sandwiches and stuff if you want. I don't, but if when the rare occasions when Obi has the time and he's off work, I mean, to come and sit with me, he'll go down, there's a local Tesco, to go down there and get a sandwich, or go and get a Subway or something like that. The disadvantage of this is the time you have to spend up there. The drama of the needles, which is ongoing. It's not the needles, it's whether it works well or not. Because if you have a bad session, you tend to have a bad session. And one thing goes wrong and then everything else tends to go wrong. And you can come out feeling quite stressed. Like Tuesday, when they put the needle in wrong, then my blood pressure dropped once, then it dropped again at the end, and then something else. Oh, I was in real pain with my arm that day. It doesn't usually happen, but it was so excruciatingly painful. It's just like that sickening ache, that, you know, the kind of pain that makes you feel sick. But that didn't happen since, thankfully. That would be hard to cope with every time if it was like that. I don't know what caused that, whether it's something to do with where she'd put that needle in wrong the first time. But the food, when you're on peritoneal dialysis, because you're draining fluid out several times a day, or you should be, even on the limited amount that I got to be doing in the end, your potassium is being absorbed into the fluid in the abdomen and through osmosis with other toxins. Now, all my other levels were really high, but my potassium was always good. It should be for anybody. And it doesn't matter whether you're a kidney patient or not, between, I think, 3.5 and 5.5. It's a bit dangerous if it goes too low, but it's even more dangerous if it goes anything over 6. Now, the difference with hemodialysis is that when you come out of there, your blood is clean, but it doesn't get cleaned again for, well, on a Tuesday, not till the Thursday, on a Thursday, not till the Saturday, and like now, on a Saturday, not till a Tuesday. So therefore, anything you eat that contains these things, like potassium and stuff, it's going to build up in your bloodstream. Now, I should have known this, but I wasn't really aware of it. So one of the first times I had a couple of months ago, they'd take blood tests every month, and in between if they need to, but everyone has monthly blood tests and MRSA tests. Like, they do it before dialysis. So one day my potassium was 6.2. Now, anything over 6.5 is really in the realms of danger. I mean, anything over 6, if you look it up, would say danger zone. I was okay. It did panic me because I've got access to my results online. So I was panicking because... but then when you go on the machine, then it'll bring it down like one unit, like it'll... If it starts at 6.2, it'll probably bring back to 5.2. So what you have to then do is to really be careful that you don't eat anything that's got too much potassium. Because if you can eat a little. So if you can get it that it only goes up to 5.8 that time, then when you have the dialysis the next time, it'll take it down to 4.8. That's how you get it to come down. So I had to have mine low. Normally they take it before dialysis. So the 6.2 was before dialysis. The next month it was 5.6. So I had work to get it down a bit. The other day when I had to have, they did an extra test on me because I had this procedure on Friday. So Thursday evening, 8:15, the courier came to collect my blood, which had just that second been taken. He was just being bagged up when he rang the bell. Must have got to King's about 9. 11:45, I looked on the patient view, my patient view page, and it was there already, 3.3. Wow. So it was probably 4.3 when it started. So I think I have kind of got the measure of it now. There's some things I really can't eat. I'll tell you the things I can that are okay. Everything's got potassium in it, but some things have are safe to eat. And, you know, bread is fine, pasta, rice, potatoes boiled only, and only three the size of an egg a day. But I very rarely eat potatoes. Chips are a no-no, though I do have them sometimes. I had McDonald's the other week. Meat and fish and corn and anything like that's got potassium in, but you have to eat that. Baked beans, no really. Although, because I'm a vegetarian, she said I can use those as a source of protein, so the dietitian wouldn't advise me. You know, I don't have to give those up, just be careful what I eat on the same day. It's not the beans so much, it's the tomato sauce. Tomato sauce, ketchup, no. Anything with tomato puree in. There's so many things. I mean, dried fruit, ordinary fruit, I can have 2 portions a day. That's small portions, like a plum and a small tangerine or a small apple. 3 portions of veg, which is like 2 tablespoons of veg is 1 portion. A small bowl of salad I can have instead of 1 portion. Chocolate, crisps, some crisps. I've got a list of crisps that are okay, and it's very short, and they're like wheat snacks. But a lot of, even things like Doritos have got potassium in the flavouring, you see. So there's so much. Eggs and cheese, they're bad for other things, but they're all right for potassium. Milk is bad, only 300 mils a day. All like any brands bad, but oats, corn, wheat, shredded wheat, cornflakes, Rice Krispies, anything like that. No chocolate, nut or fruit cereals, no muesli. Boiled sweets are okay, like chewy things like pastels are okay. Any cakes apart from things with currants and nuts and fruits and chocolate, which rules out quite a lot, hence me having a donut. Jam and marmalade, surprisingly okay. No Marmite, although Connor made me Marmite on toast this morning in bed, and I ate it because he didn't know, and it was only a little bit. I put loads on, but he doesn't, so. Drinks, coffee, I can have a cup of instant coffee a day, but I don't really drink coffee much, so. You can drink some alcohol, but I don't drink anyway. Wine and beer, no-nos, but and sherry, but things like spirits are okay as far as potassium's concerned. I'm not saying they're okay, but you know what I mean. It's all relative. Olives are bad, and avocados, obviously bananas and beetroot, everyone knows those things. There's some more surprising things. I mean, nuts and seeds, no. So I am very restricted as to what I can safely eat. I can have little treats, and I believe in everything in moderation as long as I'm sensible. And I wasn't being sensible because I didn't really understand the difference between the potassium in the hemo and the potassium in the PD. But now I do, then I've got it under control properly. And the fluid intake's another disadvantage. In 3 days, I wouldn't want to drink more than about 1.8 litres. Because the most I ever want them to take off is 2.5. They can take up to 4, but they've never taken more than 2.5 off of me. I've done that without my blood pressure dropping, and they've taken 1.2 off of me and my blood pressure dropped. But 2.5, because if I drink 700 mils a day, that's really my limit when I've got 3 days to go. Night of the weekend, because when you have a dry weight, I'm not going to tell you what mine is, it's gone down considerably, it's gone down 10 kilograms since I started, but you have, because I could still do with losing a bit more weight, probably the same again, maybe not quite as much. But anyway, I'm much slimmer than I was, and I'm much more energetic as a result.